welcome to the Hermit's Lamp podcast. I'm Andrew McGregor, and with each installation in this podcast, we're going to explore the world of spirituality, what it means to be alive, and how is it that we can bring our spiritual selves, tarot, meditation, religious or spiritual practices, into our daily lives. Please check out all of our episodes at thehermitslamp.com/podcasts, or you can search The Hermit's Lamp in podcasts on iTunes and download them all directly that way. So while I've got you here listening to this podcast, I want to mention a new project that I am rolling out. Can you imagine working with a tarot that reflected you in your life? Can you imagine working with a deck where all of the imagery was tied to your specific experiences, imagery, and history? Can you imagine going through a six-month journey of working with each of the cards and being guided through a process to help reveal both their nature and your relationship to them? Well, if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, then I invite you to check out my new project called A Tarot of Yourself, and it can be found at thehermitslamp.com/tarotofyou. The first round of this project is going to start in September. However, at any point, you can jump in and start your own journey with this process. So do go and check it out, thehermitslamp.com/tarotofyou, all one word. So welcome to another episode of the Hermit's Lamp podcast. I'm Andrew McGregor, and I am here with Scott Grossberg to talk about magic, and tarot. So for people who might not know who you are, Scott, why don't you give us a little taste of who you are and what you do.
Well, first of all, Andrew, thanks for having me on the show. I'm very honored that you invited me. As far as me, I do a lot of things. I've been called a Renaissance guy. I don't know if that's completely accurate, but I'll give your listeners a small flavor of what I've been doing. First of all, I've been a litigator, a lead trial counsel for about 30 years now. I'm also an executive coach and a mentor for political and business leaders. I do lots of seminars and keynote speeches on what I call thinking magically. You know, it's essentially putting personal power back into your own life. And then I think of most interest to your listeners is I've written two books on the tarot. An introductory one for the major arcana, and then a follow-up that eventually became what I called my unified theory of divination. That one's called the Vitruvian Square. The first one was called the Masks of Tarot. And then between those two, I created an oracle deck called the Deck of Shadows. And that kind of sums up what I do. I just integrate all of it into my life, and it is what it is, all centered around magic.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I really enjoy, because I follow you on Facebook, is these shadow thoughts that you pop out there. You know, the little sort of nudges to re-examine the way we're looking at things.
I do, thank you. And those actually arose out of the Deck of Shadows, the Oracle deck. And basically, it's a three-card spread turned into little thoughts.
And how do you put it all together? You know, do you feel a separation? Do you feel that you're putting on a different hat when you go to litigate, or does it all just kind of flow continuously for you in some way?
Great question, and one that I'm asked all the time. I think that a lot of people believe that people like you, people like me, people that take the stage, I mean, that's one of the biggest fears that people in the United States have is public speaking. Anytime they see somebody who does what we do, who speaks for a living, they seem to believe that there's this compartmentalized way of doing things, kind of like when you get your food in a TV dinner tray and everything is in a different area, and you might want to go to the mashed potatoes, you want to go to the turkey or whatever it is. And that's not the way I work. It's all one alchemical blend, all centered around, again, this whole concept of magic. And, you know, magic's been in my life since I was very little. And I've now expanded that. When I use the word magic, it's your personal power, your confidence, your ability to create in the world. And so it all starts with a mindset, whether I'm in court, whether I'm talking to you, whether I'm standing on a stage in front of a room full of people, or just doing a one-on-one reading with people. It's all the same thing. It's bringing that mindset. So for me, it's a way of living rather than, okay, I got to get my head into a zone for this, and then I got to get my head into a different zone for that. That's not it. For me, it's all one approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. For me, I would say that I bring the whole of myself to whatever I'm doing. If I'm playing with my kids, then the whole of myself is present and engaged in that activity. If I'm doing a reading for somebody, then it's the same thing. And even though the activities are different, that magic, at least for me, is everything is connected and present, and that allows for whatever parts of my self to flow as needed. Is that kind of what you're getting at in some ways?
It is. It's the idea of authenticity, transparency, integrity. When you get me, you got me right now. When you get me, you get who I am. And when I hang up the phone with you, I will be the same guy. If I'm talking with a client, if I'm talking with my wife, there may be a different linguistic approach to the way I do things with different people, but there's still the same intent and the same personal power behind what I bring to it. So I'm the same guy on and off the stage, in other words.
Mm-hmm. And do you ever find that you're, in your litigating side and someone finds out about the tarot side? Does that come up much?
It does. And interestingly enough, it was one of those things where for a very long time, I deluded myself. I had this great hallucination that I had to keep all of this secret. It was my dirty little secret and nobody was going to know. Well, that's kind of hard to do when your books perform well on Amazon and through Barnes & Noble and direct publishing. It kind of gets out there. And then, I do my stage work. I do performances. I'm a member of the Magic Castle out here in Hollywood. And I do a lot of lectures, by the way, for magicians, illusionists. And it is all, as a matter of fact, it's a whole series called Divination for Magicians. And, you don't put yourself out there like that unless you're hallucinating like I did and think nobody's going to find out. Mm-hmm. And so at some point people have found out, and all of my delusions, my hallucinations, my fears were completely off. And rather than people joking, making fun, deriding me, everybody started embracing it. And it was, how cool is that? This isn't a one-sided, one-dimensional, flat jerk of a guy. There's actually something more deeper, more profound to him, that this is kind of cool. And, Andrew, it kind of all goes back to every single person listening to this show, the people I certainly deal with. Everybody wants wonder and magic back in their lives, mm-hmm. in one form or another. Everybody wants to be that little kid again with the wide eyes going, is that possible? And, my whole aim, whether it's litigating or in a boardroom or coaching or doing whatever it is that I'm doing, is to find a way, what I call levitating, but it's elevating the people that I'm working with, even if you're on the other side, and we're negotiating against each other. And so it's been very interesting where I've had judges talk about it. I've had some of the top companies in this country talk about it, and they just think it's cool. Mm-hmm. I don't hide it anymore. It is what it is.
Yeah, I find it interesting, because I have a store here in Toronto, so people just walk in off the street, and so come and find me in that way, as well as, obviously they look at me up other ways. And, I've read for judges and members of parliament and like all these people that you would think, are conservative and, you know, and all this, but it's a big hallucination, I think, in the whole world, right? That everybody wants that magic, right? Everybody wants that guidance and that sense of, you know, whatever it is that you're going to get out of a particular reading. So yeah, it doesn't surprise me. I think that undoing those hallucinations is like one of the best things that tarot can do, and becomes so liberating once we step into that space.
Yeah, and so the thing that I bring, I think, a little uniquely, something certainly different than what I've seen a lot of people do, and I haven't seen you read, so it, you know, if I step on any toes here, I'd like to say I apologize, but I don't.
you know, go ahead and be yourself, and don't worry about me.
My approach to it is a little different, and it's all built around the concept, and I've said this for years now, that people turn to divination, people turn to fortune telling when their own magic fails them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I do a reading, when I am using either my own oracle deck or a tarot deck, it isn't fortune telling. I've actually borrowed from James Wanless, who's, you know, the amazing inventor of the Voyager Tarot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, James calls it, you know, fortune creation. Mm-hmm. And so that's the approach that I bring to this. And so more times than not, irrespective of what the spread is that you might be using, for example, any reading starts with, what do you want? And I actually get involved in a conversation with people. Then we lay the cards out, we look at them, and it doesn't stop there. And I think that's where a lot of readers, they just look at the cards, they tell you a story, they invent a story, whatever it is, and then it suddenly becomes this fixed prophecy that someone has to walk away and ruminate over. I don't stop there. What it becomes is, let's talk about what you want, let's talk about what isn't working, where are you stuck, what's the rut, how do we fill it? Then we pull some cards. And then there's a discussion of, great, you told me what you wanted. You told me what you wanted to achieve. Here's what's on the table. What has to change in that spread to move us from there to what you told me a moment before you wanted to achieve? And then we actually rearrange the cards or take new cards out to create an image, a vision, a blueprint, a process of the action steps they need to take, and it's a co-creation. That's a different discussion than just laying out a bunch of cards and saying, here's your life, get on with it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I think that, you know, fortune telling as like, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, to me that's, it's, although it's helpful in some situations, I'm not that interested in it in general. You know, it's funny. I was actually recording with James Wanless yesterday. So he is fresh in my mind. And
he's a marvelous guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the process, the idea of empowering people, the idea, and not just in a like, you know, there's a big difference between giving someone a pat on the back and saying you can do it, which is helpful. And actually, as you're saying, taking them through a process where they say, okay, I can do it. And in order to do it, I'm going to do this and this and this. And they are clear and actionable steps that they can then go on, you know, go out and be like, okay, so tomorrow I'm going to make this phone call and I'm going to go do this. And I need to start changing this job situation and or whatever it is, right? To get them to that place where they're able to make the life that they want happen.
Exactly. And, you know, the biggest thing that I bring to people is I get them to participate in their own success.
Mm-hmm.
All too often, you know, someone comes to you for a reading, they want to be a bystander. They want you to tell them, and then they will accept it, and then they will make concessions, and then they will let the lines in the sand get crossed, and whatever it is that they have to do to make excuses to either make the reading fit, or to comport their lives with whatever they've been told success is supposed to be. And that's just not me. It does nothing for me. I'm all about execution. I'm all about saying and doing. I'm all about getting people to understand what is the more they want in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's reboot you. So I treat cards and readings and discussions like this as a way for me to help reprogram people rewire them, you know, the control alt, think of me as a human control alt delete for what you want. And this isn't about me imposing anything that I want. This is me saying, look, I've got a bunch of alchemical tools here, and I can use them in any different way, from linguistic patterning to, you know, hypnotherapy to suggestion to you name it, we'll bring it to the table. And it's essentially, I become again, this may offend some people, I become a human placebo. And that means I'm going to tell people what needs to happen to get them to light a fire under their behinds, you know, the get off your butt mentality. And with the understanding that placebos work even when you know that's what they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter to me whether you believe in cards or not. It doesn't matter to me whether you believe in divination or not. It doesn't matter to me what you believe in. The fact of the matter is we as human beings seek meaning in everything that we do. We're wired for that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really my job to put different dots out that will help us all connect them and, again, lead people to participate in the success that they tell me that they want to have. Mm-hmm. That's also presuming that they're being honest about the success they want.
Well, that kind of leads me to the next question, right? How do you relate to that then when people sometimes are not being honest with you or maybe even not being honest with themselves about what they want? Is that part of your conversation where you kind of work that out before you get to it, or how does that work for you?
You know, again, depends on my relationship and history and context with the individual. How did they get to me? Do I know them? You know, can I read about them? Are they relatively well known, so their life is out there? Is it that kind of conversation, or is it, I don't know who you are, I don't know how you got here, let's have a chat. If that's the case, if it's truly an unknown, then I actually treat the major arcana as a glorified inkblot test.
Mm.
And I will go through with no questions at all and simply have them take out the major arcana. I'll take them out for them. They go through them, and then they start selecting cards that they like in the order that they like them. They also choose cards that don't call to them, that don't want to be chosen at all. Mm. And I don't explain it to them. So it becomes a psychological personality test type of thing where it becomes very transparent, has nothing to do with divination. This is them responding and reflecting upon images and saying, this one calls to me, this one doesn't. This one says, I'm grabbing you by the throat and I'm not letting you go. This one says, you know, this is the next way you're going to get killed. I mean, it's really that bold in some people's minds. And then I apply something that I wrote about in The Masks of Tarot called The Alchemy of Human Needs, where I've taken Maslow's hierarchy, his human needs, turned it on its head, and that gets applied to this whole mix. It sounds very long and involved, takes all of about 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew, believe it or not, at that point, the person I'm reading has laid it all out on the line, because at that point, they've told me their highest desires. They've told me the mask that they put onto the world. They've told me what happens when the mask gets pulled off. They've told me what it is that they've put in their back pocket because they don't think they need to deal with it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, that's probably the one thing they need to look at the most. And so I get that as a backdrop. They can lie all they want. You know, why waste all of our time and waste all of our energy and waste all of the productivity? Most people who lie don't do it intentionally in that setting. They have deluded themselves. And so a lot of that reading then becomes how to strip away their own delusions and at least know the mask they're putting off to the world and understand the truth for themselves. It's very revealing. And it can be actually very emotional for people when they come face to face with who they really are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I do work like that, especially with the coaching clients that I work with, where when they start getting stuck or they're showing up and they haven't done their homework or whatever, it's like, all right, You know what? Let's. I'll hand them the trumps. I use Robert Wang's Jungian tarot, and you know, I just like which one do you like? Which one do you feel like? Which one? You know, and even when they're like, I picked the happiest one I could, you know, and they're like, pick something that looks really joyous, and we'll start talking, and we'll ask them about it, and as you say, they reveal everything. No matter how much they try and go against it, the process, and especially where, you know. Like, I don't, as you say, you don't really tell them exactly what's going on. You know, if they're looking to answer a question or whatever, you know, it's always kind of an unspoken question. And then they reveal their answer and the synchronicities all line up beautifully. And then all of a sudden you're in a position to start moving ahead again. I really like that.
It is. And I'm going to add one more layer to what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because I find it the most telling of all. And it's built around the concept that the way you do anything is the way you do everything.
Mm-hmm.
I actually bring to the table, to the reading, to the conversation, to the coaching, not just the cards they select, but the way they select them. So, for example, if you hand somebody, you know, the majors, watch the way they go through them. Some people are very methodical. They'll take one card out at a time and look at it and set it aside. Some people will spread them all out, but in a nice uniform row, or they, you know, they'll fan them out. Some people, they'll lay them out in this big mess because they need to see the big mess in order to focus down on whatever it is that they're looking for. So the way they actually choose the card is sometimes, for me, the most powerful and revealing thing of all, because it's the way they make decisions. And the way people make decisions is actually the way they get success on a consistent and sustainable basis. And look, at the end of the day, that's what everybody wants. Everybody wants to feel better, and they want to know how to be more successful. Whatever success means for them, by the way. And so, you know, I think the most powerful things that we can do in this field is to help people understand how they actually make decisions about success, because that one thing, if it gets rewired, if it gets changed, even if it just gets revealed, is going to instantly transform these people.
Absolutely. So you know a lot about people. I can hear it, you know, in what you're talking about and that. How much of it have you learned by going to court and by being a lawyer and so on?
You know, it's kind of like every book that I read becomes part of me. Every life experience becomes part of me. I don't know that it's necessarily just court. I don't know that it's necessarily, you know, I've got a lot of businesses. I'm just out in the world. I observed, you know, it's very interesting. If you got a moment, I'll tell you a quick revealing story about me.
Yeah.
When I was very little, I think a lot of people have heard this story. When I was very, very little, I came home from school one day to find a deck of tarot cards on my bed. No explanation. I didn't know at the time where they came from. And, you know, I kind of got hooked on them from there, because I invented what was going on with them. It turned out I couldn't read the book, couldn't read the cards, because it was a Tarot de Marseille deck. I don't speak French. So I was left with the images and left with my own devices at that point. I then moved into stage magic. I wanted to be Harry Houdini. And so got into escapes and got into tricksters and got into sleight of hand and all that stuff as a result of going to summer camp one year. And at summer camp, there was an Israeli magician there. And I was spellbound, not by him. I could see everything that he was doing. I happen to have a mind that can be constructed and see through that stuff. But I was spellbound by what he had done to his audience. And I wanted that. I had a small problem. I was scared of everything. I would hide under the bed when I was little. I wouldn't go into grocery stores. I would just stare and look at people. I never felt like I belonged, that I had either been, you know, born in the wrong year, born in the wrong time, born in the wrong planet, you name it, I didn't belong here. But I wanted to be able to create wonder for other people, because I could see what it was doing to them. So what do you do when you have that kind of a problem? Turns out that along the way, my stepmom made an absolutely life-changing suggestion to me. And she said, Scott, why don't you get involved in film and theater? able to help you with your fright. And it was like, no, you're kidding? I can't do that. And I wound up doing it anyway. And I faced that fear, wound up getting involved, and actually got a minor through college in writing and directing, and went through all that. And it was at that point, Andrew, that I came to the realization that what I wanted was bigger than what I was afraid of. Hmm. And I took out of that a couple things. One, you know, I take people and I bring them to a point where their fears and their fantasies, their fears and their dreams collide. I mean, we get to that point. If you're going to dig deep, you got to face a fear and you got to face a fantasy. One of them is going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course of learning theater and screenplay writing and, and directing, it's not the litigation that taught me how to talk. It's learning to be a director. I'm learning to be a screenwriter. I'm learning how to, I'll use the word manipulation because that's part of magic. I learned to manipulate expectations, motivations, storylines, backstories. When I run my businesses, I actually bring to the table film production techniques. So I'm taking film production and putting it into the business world. And every good film that has ever captured your heart follows a formula. And mm-hmm. that's what I do. So it's less about being a lawyer that's taught me things. It's more about screenwriting and tarot cards and the use of language and linguistic tools. I'm a certified hypnotherapist, so there's certainly a lot of Ericksonian and Dave Ellman and a lot of that type of structure brought into it. A lot of improvisational tools. You know, one of the biggest things I learned doing improvisation is the yes and concept. The minute you start putting but, B-U-T, into the context of any setting, you've negated everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a lot of this whole thing where I call it alchemical. I find what works, and I steal it like an artist, and I embrace it. And so, you know, if I hear something, read something, I actually take things from a lot of fiction books that I'm reading that are absolutely amazing when you apply them in the business world.
Yeah. You know, I was, when I was 14, I was in a very serious accident, and I broke my femur, and I couldn't walk properly for the better part of a year, and needed multiple surgeries to put parts of me back together again and stuff like that. And the thing that I was already interested, I'd already had a tarot deck at that point and stuff, and I'd already been interested in these things in general. But I think that what came out of that for me was this insatiable desire to know, what is it about? What's really going on? What's behind the world and behind people and behind all these things? And that sort of ability to continuously analyze things, which I hear in what you're talking about as well, is really, I think, really helpful. And, you know, and the way in which curiosity and looking for where our passion is can pull us beyond things, you know. I had a very similar sort of experience in that I was incredibly shy as well. And, you know, and now here I am, really not shy at all about much of anything anymore. And, you know, it's fascinating how when we get to the right piece of it, or when we put the focus in the right place, then it can pull us past all of those fears and all of those bits and pieces that might otherwise encourage us just to sit on the couch and not do much.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the biggest things that I think I bring to the table for people is the ability to systematize a person's situation so that they've got actual tools that they can follow consistently so that they get sustainable success. You know, anybody, I call it the blind pig syndrome, you know, even blind pigs can find acorns. I don't want people being blind pigs, which, by the way, again, unlike, I think, people who do what you and I do, I very rarely will read time and time again for the same people because I want them to take charge of their own lives. I don't want someone addicted to readings because they think it's cool, or it's a replacement for making their own decisions. So, you know, one of the things I always encourage people to do is ask questions, challenge. Is this true? Keep asking that question, for the love of God. Is that true? I don't care who it is. You know, and it's not to put down anybody who calls into a radio show, because I certainly have been on them. But why would you call a complete stranger and take for granted what they're telling you is going to happen in your life without at least asking the question, wait a minute, is that true? Or can that really happen? Now, it might be true. It might ultimately serve them well, but at least ask the question. Don't give up your power to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I'm wondering, because you work with stage magicians and illusionists, mm-hmm. and so on.
Yeah.
What is it that they're interested in about learning that might be different from people who are looking to learn tarot in terms of just doing readings for people?
Well, it's what a great question, and thank you for asking that. The what you just asked is really the basis for what I've called thinking magically. It's my website is built around thinking magically, mm-hmm. and it's the entire concept that successful, consistent, sustainable magicians, however you want to use that term, whether it's a stage magician or an illusionist or a magician with a K, I don't care what it is, somebody who's going to be consistently, sustainably successful, they all approach it from the same perspective. So, you know, if I'm an illusionist, I need to start with the effect, not affect with an A, effect with an E. I need to start with the outcome.
Hmm.
And then we work backwards. How do I make that happen? You know, if I want to show you a card trick, I need to, sure, I can juggle cards and I can do all kinds of little fun, nifty little things. But if I want to really impact you, I've got to start with the question, what do I want Andrew to experience? Mm-hmm. And so the good magicians think like a magician and they start with the outcome. And so if you're going to get involved in tarot, the first question you got to ask yourself is why? I mean, what is it? And don't let yourself off easy by simply saying, because it's cool, or it calls to me, or I don't know, but I saw somebody else do it. If you continue to let yourself off that easy, you're doomed to failure. You might as well just let the person take the deck, hand them the little white book that's included, and let them read for themselves. There are bigger issues. Now, we've all run into those people who do readings, and it's all ego-based, egocentric, power-based. It's a power trip. And again, if you just ask the simple question, is what you're telling me true? Why are you telling me this? Things like that, you will see through that very easily. I don't want people drinking Kool-Aid, for lack of a better way to put it. That's not what I'm about. However, for example, my approach to readings is to elevate you, to levitate you, to take you to the next level, to help you achieve what it is that you want to achieve. That's a different approach. And so people have got to be honest with themselves. You know, I come home from school when I'm little and I find a tarot deck on my bed. I can't tell you why I was attracted to what I was. The pictures called to me. They suddenly told stories. I could rearrange them and create a different story every time. I could bring my imagination and creativity, and suddenly I was creating things. So there was some power to it. And then you grow up and you start reading for other people and you start seeing their reactions. So first and foremost, it's why you want to do it. And the next thing for people getting started in tarot, in my opinion, there are people I'm sure who would disagree, is understanding what it is that, what are your foundational tools? You know, there are certainly people out there, really good people, who profess that you can read tarot and oracle cards without ever opening a little white book or study. And that's true, by the way. You can look at them and certainly just read, because people are intuitive. I have long maintained that if you can read a deck of tarot cards, you can do the same thing with light bulbs in a room.
Sure.
Okay. It doesn't matter. It's the same process that we bring to the table. But as you're starting out, at least get the foundation down. You know, when I deal with stage magicians or close-up magicians or illusionists, there are sleights. There are only so many effects, types of effects that you can achieve. Make something appear, make something disappear. You transform something, you levitate something, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That knowledge is not the magic. Learning the foundational sleights and then doing them is the magic. So when you're starting out with tarot, my gosh, do yourself a favor. There are thousands of decks out there now. There are tarot decks, there are oracle decks, there are crossover decks, there are, you name it, they're out there. Maybe the one that you've got right now isn't the right one for you. I collect them, by the way. I flip around. I seem to go back to my Rider-Waite one. Most of the time I'm using my deck of shadows. But I've studied all of them. I've studied the images. I've studied why certain images were put in there. I've studied the type of art that was used in them. Understand the sleights that you're going to use. Understand the foundation that you have, because at some point in a reading, further on down the line, you're going to have to improvise. This isn't just laying out a Celtic cross every single time. It doesn't work every time, and it's certainly not for you every time.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be able, very rarely do I even use a standard spread anymore, because I know this stuff so well. I talk about in my books, by the way, doing spreads in my head. You work with the stuff enough, the images, you could actually just generate them in your head if you wanted to. The cards themselves become props for the other person to see. You really don't, as a reader, need them. And so as you're starting out, put the deck with you under your pillow. Start, doing some path work so that you understand the symbology involved. Get to know these cards like you would a lover.
Mm-hmm.
Now, every good magician knows his tools.
Yeah, well, I really like this notion. If we know the sleights or the techniques or the different things that we can do to help get the effect that we're looking for from the person we're reading for, then it becomes a question of just being engaged and present with that and monitoring and adjusting. Oh, we're heading a little bit too much this way. Oh, we've stepped out of the wonder. Let's bring the wonder back. Oh, they've handed the power. I better hand the power back to them. This sort of open-ended flowing process towards manifesting that special effect, which is, as you say, to elevate and levitate them. I like it.
It is, and it's coupled with, again, now you're going to get the screenwriter part of me, the director part of me. It's all the hero's journey. So if mm-hmm. you start treating your readings as if they're on this giant monomyth, if they are part of, Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, go look at some of the Pixar storytelling rules that are available on the Internet. Just look up Pixar and look up storytelling rules.
Mm-hmm.
You will see that's the way to do a reading. To create interest and wonder and empowerment and actual transformation and change. We are all storytellers. At the end of the day, my job is to sit down with somebody or take a room full of people if it's a keynote speech, or I'm having a conversation with you and take you on a journey and show that character arc for you so that you are in a better place at the end of the story. And I've helped you now tell a better story yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So when you're doing spreads and stuff then, are you doing open-ended kind of work these days? Is that where you've kind of come to with it?
Here's the interesting thing. I'm very stingy with my time. Uh-huh. I think you should know just from setting up this talk today. I'm just not that readily available one-on-one to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of my stuff is done on air or live with a bunch of people. And that's a different kind of approach to things. One-on-one, when I do have people, first and foremost, I don't charge for readings. That's not what I'm about. I know that's going to, again, go against the grain for some people.
You're just upsetting everybody today.
Well, and that's okay. I'm resetting them.
Yeah,
that's not how I make my living.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I share one of my passions. So first and foremost, I don't care if, you know, that you're the CEO of a Fortune 500 company or you're somebody who can't afford to rub two nickels together. I don't charge money for what I do on a one-to-one basis, not what I do. Because I think that, for me, takes away some of the magic that I want to impart. Mm-hmm. However, whether you charge or you don't, I'm flexible enough in what I'm doing to ask people what they want. I mean, people come to a reading and they want an answer to something. Very rarely do they show up and go, I don't know, I'm just here for, you know, fun and giggles, and tell me whatever you want. That's kind of not what I want to do, and I'm not there to entertain them. Mm-hmm. And so it's, what do you want? The answer to what do you want will dictate the spread. So a lot of times I'm using a 3-7 spread, where, you know, seven cards on top, seven cards in the middle, seven cards at the end, past, present, future. The middle represents the now for each, or the most important significant card for each one. I don't read reversals, mm-hmm. Which, by the way, there's another good example of, you're going to get handed a deck of cards. You're going to read about reversals in your little white book or in your guidebook or in your manual or someone you've seen do it. I've read reversals, and I find out, guess what? I don't need them. Doesn't add anything for Scott. You won't know that unless you actually experiment and get to know these things. Mm-hmm. So usually 3-7s. I will always do a three-card pull with my Oracle deck. A lot of times that 3-7 spread is it's kind of a blend of both the deck of shadows and the tarot deck. So you've got two cards for each position, depending on how much time is involved. So that's kind of my standard. I all the time it's that three-card spread, because I can tell a story with three cards. You know, once I triangulate off of those three, we can talk about the journey. Every now and then there's just somebody wants a yes or no. And that's okay, we'll do a one-card spread, one-card pull, and they will look at it that way. So those are kind of my go-to things. I haven't used the Celtic Cross in so many years that I'm not even sure I remember all the positions anymore. Again, my spreads are built around telling a story. Now, I've got to tell you, I get nothing from this, by the way, not a joint venture, not an associate, not affiliate, nothing. There's a new deck out called the Dynamic Spreads deck that on Facebook, his name is Bill Tarot.
Love Bill Tarot.
And, you know, I've got Bill's deck, and what it is, it's essentially a deck of spreads, so you can create your own. And what I talked to Bill about was I took his Dynamic Spreads deck to actually the next level. So what will happen is his deck is built around different kinds of spreads, themes, issues, topics. I actually hand the deck to the person and mm-hmm. let them look through all the varieties and say, hey, I need to know the answer to this one. And so we kind of conjointly choose what's going to happen. And then from there, I'll do the 3-7 spread or whatever happens.
Nice. Yeah, Bill was a guest on the podcast earlier in the summer or something like that. So people are looking to catch that if they haven't. TheHermitsLamp.com/podcast, and then just scroll down until you find Bill. And we talked a bunch about his dynamic spread deck, which I think is just a wonderful idea, you know.
I think it's absolutely marvelous.
And I love those tools that pose questions to us in a way that allows us to figure out what we actually need. It's one of the things that I really love about the book that comes with the Gaian Tarot by Joanna Powell Colbert, is when you look at the majors, there's a list of questions at the end of it. And, you know, especially for my daily draws, you know, I pull a card and look, you know, when I was learning the deck and look at the book and go down, I'm like, oh, that's my issue. That's totally my issue today. Now I need to sit with that question and figure out what to do about it, which is such a fruitful way to go into working with the cards, I think.
It is, and a lot of times, kind of this goes back full circle. A lot of times people show up, they think they want the answer to one thing, and they actually don't. And sometimes they don't even realize it. The other thing, you know, for people just starting out, and even for the intermediate user, we'll call it that, I really am a huge fan of Enrique Enriquez. Enrique and I go way back. Enrique is a reader out of New York. An interesting approach, by the way, an underlying philosophy. I'm not going to spoil it for anybody. An interesting underlying philosophy to what the cards are themselves. But for those people, he's got a video out called Tarology, T-A-R-O-L-O-G-Y. He's got a book out on it, but go look him up. Go find him on social media. If you're in New York, oh my gosh, go find Enrique. I love this guy. I love his very studied, skeptical. Yes, I used the word skeptical. Studied, skeptical, pragmatic approach to readings, and how he's almost poetic in the way he tells the stories. And he works exclusively, I believe, now with the Tarot de Marseille and a specific version of that that tarot. And he actually, you know, you and I will look at a Marseille deck and look at some of the pip cards and say, this is just a jungle of the same stuff. He actually has a way of visualizing what's going to happen based on the numerical value of these cards, the way they all intertwine. I'm blown away because Enrique and I will exchange some things privately, and just some of his insights. Things, you know, I've been working with Tarot now, 45 years now. And even I am constantly amazed by some of the visual aspects that he brings to it. So again, whether you're starting out or an intermediate, Enrique is one of those. He's just a master.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely
really phenomenal.
And I'm also a huge fan. He was on the podcast, so you can also find his podcasts. And if you're catching this before mid-October 2014, you could participate live in a five-night Marseille course that I'm running online, where Enrique is going to come teach one of the evenings to teach his poetic technique as part of it. And there'll be three other teachers and myself and Enrique. And if you're getting this later than that, all of that stuff will have been recorded and available for download. So his techniques are amazing, and he is there's such a profoundness to the way in which he approaches the idea that there are more interesting things to do with the cards than just read them. And,
yep.
You know, and I really like that way of accessing it. They have so much more to teach us than just, you know, well, on Tuesday, you're going to meet your new boyfriend, you know, or what have you. I mean, those questions are relevant too, but that on a deeper level, I think that his explorations mirror exactly what all of the esoterists have attempted to do as well. But in a completely different manner, which I think is pretty interesting.
Yeah. Now, you know, I want to underscore something here. You and I actually didn't chat ahead of time about what we were going to discuss, nor who we were going to talk about. For listeners, the fact that we've now jointly talked about, and they've been on your podcast, you know, Enrique and James Wanless, you guys, it does not happenstance that there are some well-known people who work with these cards, who work with oracles, who work with divination, who work with fortune creation. It is not, you know, a coincidence that Andrew and I are talking about the same people.
Mm-hmm.
That should catch your attention. Go look up these podcasts. Go look up these people. Connect with them. They're readily accessible on social media. You know, we're all on social media, and we all share with each other. You'd be amazed how your knowledge and appreciation of the art, the craft that we're talking about, because it really is a craft, will exponentially grow.
And especially, too, if you're, you know, I mean, I don't want it to sound like this is all about selling books or, you know, enrollment in my class or, you know, any of these things either, because it's really, I mean, if that's something that you want, wonderful, and then please come be a part of it. But if you go and hang out with these people, you know, I mean, you're going to learn stuff just by looking, just by listening, just by engaging and commenting or asking questions or whatever. And it's amazing how much, just sort of being around, even if it's only on social media. Let me rephrase that. Even on social media, you know, you can learn so many things that are interesting ways to look at the world, interesting ways of taking a radically different look at yourself and kind of shaking things up. You know, there's so much out there that is just present and available if you're looking for it. And you know, to me, that's one of the most fascinating things. I see a lot of sort of people slagging social media these days, and for me, I find it fascinating. I love it. I wouldn't be talking to Scott here today without it, and I wouldn't know many of the people that I know. And for me, it's just this wonderful place where I get to reach out and connect and engage and learn so many things in a way that, you know, years ago I would have had to buy a lot of plane flights and have a massive library to try and get some of these simple, wonderful, easily exchanged tidbits. So.
Yeah, and you know, it's you know, I'm on all the social media sites. I'm on Facebook and Google Plus and LinkedIn, you know, Twitter. You name it, I've got a social media presence. Enrique has a social media presence. James has a social media presence. The one thing that I throw out there, and I'm not speaking for everybody, but it's certainly the way I first engaged in social media way back when it first started, is the understanding that everybody on social media is your teacher or your student or both. And that brings with it an obligation. Don't just reach out to somebody, as much of a fan as you might be. If you want to reach out and just say, hey, look, I'm a fan, that's great. I mean, certainly all of us get those kinds of emails, and it's very nice to say, to read somebody read the Masks of Tarot or read the Vitruvian Square and got a lot out of it. It's very nice. In fact, somebody just got a hold of me and is creating, with my permission, by the way, some talking boards, wooden, you know, what used to be called Ouija boards, actually has taken the matrix from the Vitruvian Square and has put them onto wood and is lacquering them. The guy's out of the Netherlands. It's phenomenal work that will allow you to use and do spreads. But he brought something, no pun intended, to the table. don't just contact someone and go, hey, Scott, can you give me a free reading? Mm-hmm. Now, I might do that, and periodically on Facebook, for example, I'll post, you know, if I've got time, I just got a wild hair, I'll do a reading for someone anonymously. I'll put their initials up there. If they find it, great. If they don't, great, but everybody gets to read it. I don't use a full name, it's just initials. But that, you know, I'm not going to take an hour and give you a free reading just because you asked for it. What do you bring to the table? Tell me who you are. Tell me, what is it that we're going to have as a friendship, as a partnership? Don't just take on social media. Social media really is about being social, which means having to give. So keep asking yourself, why? What do I bring to this relationship too, and offer that? Mm-hmm. I think you'll be amazed how accessible everybody is.
Absolutely. I'm always super honored with you know, the amount of positive response I get when I'm reaching out to people and, you know, being like, hey, I'm doing this podcast, will you come and be a part of it? When you ask, you know, most people are willing to say yes, you know. So it's it's great.
Yeah, social media is a two-way street. It's not just being a sponge, there's part of that in there, you know, where you're soaking everything up, but it's also giving back. And you know, the relationships that I have with people through social media are true exchanges. I mean, they are philosophical and deep and energizing, and you know, stuff that you wouldn't even find in books with some of these authors, because we're exploring different things privately. You can have that too if you bring your game to the table as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I guess my question for you is, what's next for you? Where are you going? What's drawing you forward?
Great question. The biggest thing is I'm expanding my public speaking enterprises, doing much more of the thinking magically, getting people inspired and off their own behinds. I've even changed the whole approach to it, because thinking magically, you know, I work with the rebels, the nonconformists, and the habitually restless. That I want those people, the people who want to get out there and change things up. If you're happy with the way things are, I don't think anybody is, but if you're happy with the way things are, I'm not your guy. I might keep you motivated periodically, but I'm not the best coach or teacher for you, even in a giant public setting. So, you know, the seminar is to take everybody who's restless, to take the people who want to change up their life, work with them. I am working on actually now editing a Thinking Magically book. The challenge that I have is that it's about 900 pages right now, so I'm not quite sure how to deal with that. A lot of it has grown out of the blogs that I post every Sunday. So, you can go to thinkingmagically.com, see my blog on there. Every Sunday, there's a new empowerment article or something about readings or something about the Vitruvian Square, something like that. But it comes out every Sunday. So the book will be an expansion of that. And then I'm actually working on a new deck. So lots of exciting stuff.
Wonderful. Well, I look forward to checking it out. And I've been enjoying checking out your blog as well. So, yeah. If you're listening to this, you know, go find Scott. You know, what's the website is?
It's Thinking, THINKING, Thinking Magically, M as in Mary, AGICALLY, so it's thinkingmagically.com. From there, you can click on the blog and you can watch this short little video that's on there if you want to see that. My books are available through there. I don't sell books, so it's just the links to the Amazon locations for those. And then I'm on social media, so look up Scott Grossberg or F. Grossberg on Facebook, and Google Plus, and LinkedIn, Twitter. I think I'm now on Instagram and probably every other social media.
Whatever else you got.
Whatever else is out there. So I'm readily available, but you got to reach out and make the connection.
Beautiful. Well, thank you for making the time. I really appreciate it today. It's been a very fun conversation.
Thank you for having me on, Andrew.
So I want to thank you for listening and, of course, remind you that all of these episodes are available at thehermitslamp.com/podcasts. And also, if you're looking for something exciting and different, please consider checking out the Tarot de Marseille for Modern Times course that I'm putting on this fall. It involves some great teachers, including Enrique Enriquez, Camilia Elias, Christopher Carroza and Yov Ben Dov, as well as myself, taking everybody through what wonderful things we can do with this deck and how we can really find the gold that is why this particular deck has persevered for so long and why I think it is one of the best decks ever created. So you can check that out by going to thehermitslamp.com and just click on the icon for it right on the homepage there. Talk to you soon. Thanks for listening. And if there's somebody you'd like to see on here, or if you have any feedback, please do send me an email, find me on Facebook, and let me know what you think. Thanks. Bye-bye.